So is it okay to use guilt and shame to persuade and influence to motivate? Does that work? Are we allowed to do it? Is that ethical, unethical? What do you think? We're going to talk about it. Let's get into it.
Maximize Your Influence is your podcast for the latest persuasion, sales, and negotiation techniques. Our mission is to help you influence on command, anyone, anytime, anywhere. Your host is the author of Persuasion IQ, Laws of Charisma, and the best-selling book, Maximum Influence. Now, your host, Kurt Mortensen.
Awesome. Glad to have you here. This is podcast 501. Hope everyone's having a great week. Had one of those hard weeks where I had to go to Hawaii. Did some speaking, mostly playing. Always a good place. Warm, tropical. We'll just have to call it paradise. Nice and nice. Good food, good people, good fun. And saw a lot of persuasion ninjas, persuasion blunders. Some of those we'll be talking about over the next couple of weeks. So what about this shame and guilt thing? The reason I'm bringing it up, I did receive an email. By the way, send me your email at kurt@maximizeyourinfluence.com and you'll get the free gold subscription to influenceuniversity.com. And by the way, there's a free version there too. Check it out. And of course, everything you need is at maximizeyourinfluence.com, from the freebies, including your free persuasion IQ assessment, which also includes a gift for filling it out because it helps you and it helps me with my research and everything you need to know about becoming a master persuader. So this is from Cleo. It says Cleo B from the United States. Kind of vague there, but we'll go with it. Cleo, I don't know if we've met. Hopefully we've had. Says, I saw a parent use shame, or was it guilt, on their child to get their way. It was so powerful, so fast, and so efficient. Can we use this in the business world and persuade others faster? Wow. Okay, loaded question. Let's get into it. Let's answer it. But before we do, let's get into the persuasion blinja. And for those new to the podcast, that's like, okay, you get to decide, is this a persuasion blunder? Or a persuasion ninja, hence the blinja. So when I read the email, it reminded me of the South Park video. Let me play the audio.
Okay, sir, looks like your total is $37.83.
All right.
Okay, and would you like to add a dollar donation to help hungry kids around the world?
Oh, no, that's okay.
Sorry?
I'm good.
I'm sorry, you don't want to give the dollar to hungry kids?
Not today, thank you.
Okay, no problem.
Window's gonna come up and ask if you're helping the hungry kids. Just hit no, I'm not. Oh, come on.
Try hitting it again. It's the box below the one that says, sure, I'd love to help however I can.
Look, I give money to charity a lot, okay?
Oh, sure you do.
I do. I just don't want to every time I shop for food.
That's completely understandable. If you can just speak into the voice decoder and say, I'm not giving anything to the hungry kids.
I'm not giving anything to the hungry kids. Hungry kids.
Hungry kids. So, with the ice cream, the vodka, pizza pockets, and nothing for hungry kids, that's $37.83. And how are you today, sir?
Great. Listen, before you ring me up, I just want to let you know I'm not going to be giving extra money to charity. So can we just skip that part?
Oh, no problem, sir. They've updated the system, so it's a lot more streamlined now. Okay, there's a picture of a little hungry boy. Will you just press on his belly?
Ow! Ow!
Okay, that's got it. So with the no help for hungry kids, that's $18.87. Your change is right there. Just pull the sandwich out of the little girl's mouth.
This is not streamlined.
It's just the new change dispenser, sir.
I can't.
Yeah, she's a hungry one. You gotta pull hard.
The sandwich isn't coming out.
Try putting your foot on her face. Have a nice day, sir.
I was having a nice day.
Find everything you needed today?
Yes.
Okay, looks like your total comes to $37.98. Would you like to give a dollar to help feed hungry kids?
Yes, I would like to give a dollar.
You want to give a dollar?
Yes, I will.
Oh, wow, okay. So that's $10 for the beer, $4.20 in chocolate-covered peanuts, $26 in filet mignons, and $1 for hungry kids around the world. On amount of donation, it will say $10, $20, or $50. Can you just press the $1 box? Attention shoppers, somebody just joined the $1 club, giving one whole dollar to help feed hungry children. Here's your t-shirt. Oh, won't the kids be thrilled when they get their piece of that big, impressive dollar? For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow. He ended world hunger.
Amazing grace, how sweet.
This is a place where hope is scarce. These people are hungry. Little JoJo here might not eat today. But does that mean it's okay for cashiers to ask us for money while we're in the checkout line? It isn't right, and it isn't fair. Just $2 a day adds up to $62 a month if you go to Whole Foods as much as I do. Nobody should have to feel the shame, the humiliation, of being asked to add money onto their grocery bill. Help now. Let's make grocery stores a safe space for all. Together, we can make a difference.
Because charity shaming hurts everyone.
Oh, that makes me laugh. We laugh because it's real. It's happened to us. It's all over the place. So there's tipflation, and now everyone's asking for money at every turn. What do we do? How do we handle it? So let's start with the geeky, scholarly articles. The first one's called Shame, the Quintessential Emotion. This comes from Psych Central, psychologist Michael Lewis, and the psychiatrist Donald Nathanson. And as you know, all these links can be found on the website. And Dr. Nathanson did say that all extravagant behaviors are reactions to shame. Kind of interesting. It goes to talk about that shame is a complex emotional response that all humans acquire early in development. It's a normal feeling about ourselves and our behavior, and it's not always a symptom of an illness. In fact, they say it's abnormal if we don't experience it. Here's what's interesting. Embarrassment and shyness are two forms of shame that seldom cause trouble, unless they're extreme or long-lasting. And humility, another form of shame, is considered socially desirable. But then on the flip side, the research shows over the past 20 years that when you don't handle shame in the right way, it can cause social phobias, eating disorders, domestic violence, substance abuse, road rage. So basically, early in life, people develop an internalized view of themselves as adequate or inadequate within the world. Children who are continually criticized, severely punished, neglected, or abandoned, or abused get the message that they do not fit in the world, that they're inadequate, inferior, or unworthy. So these feelings of being inferior generate low self-esteem. And when you have that low self-esteem, you're oversensitive to many situations. They're afraid that they won't know the rules, that they've made mistakes, they've misspoken, they acted in ways others might consider inappropriate, or others might be critical or reject them. So when you have that low self-esteem, they become hypersensitive. The self-esteem attacks, and that's when the shame comes. Here's what's interesting, because Emil talked about guilt and shame, somewhat similar, but guilt is a feeling of doing something wrong, and shame is a feeling of being something wrong, or basically there's something wrong with me. So let's explore that. They're going to say that guilt is positive. It's healthy. They realize they've done something wrong and helps them act more positively, more responsibly, and they correct what they've done. But shame is not productive. Shame tends to direct individuals into destructive behaviors. When we focus on what we did wrong, we can fix that, right? But when we're convinced we are wrong, we feel the shame and our self-esteem is eroded. Now, it's interesting in the book Shame, Dr. Lewis says men and women express shame differently. Typically, and this is not 100%, females deal with shame through introversion and self-hate, while men are more likely to exhibit anger and violence. So when you look at guilt and shame and how they're different, another article about guilt versus shame, because they can overlap and sometimes we use them interchangeably. This comes from the Journal of Behavioral and Cognitive Psychotherapy. They go on to say they are different. Research shows that both emotions can arise during social conflict, either when you do something you consider wrong or you deviate from the social norm. So when you feel either shame or guilt, you could also feel disgust, embarrassment, humiliation, regret, remorse. So they explain it this way. Shame says I'm a bad person. Guilt says I did a bad thing. The challenge is, again, guilt's healthy. Let's get better. Let's improve. Did something wrong. I did a bad thing. Let's not do it again. Versus the shame I'm a bad person. See, what that can trigger personality disorder, eating disorders, narcissism, substance abuse. A few more examples they give in the article. Guilt is, I feel bad about getting ink on her coat. That's guilt. Shame is, I'm a bad person for getting ink on her coat. Guilt would be, my decision caused all of us to fall behind on the group project. My worthless character caused us to fall behind on the group project. So again, when you feel shame, you're more likely to feel angry, have low self-esteem, engage in those self-destructive behaviors. Guilt, you're more likely to apologize, to fix it, to repair it, to feel more compassion for other people. So bottom line, guilt and shame are useful feedback mechanisms, but left unchecked, they can interfere with our sense of self, close relationships, and how we show up in the world. Just to recap, guilt can be productive. You could fix it. You can improve. Shame has its place every once in a while, but can be destructive. There you have it. Those are your geeky, scholarly articles to talk about this guilt and shame. Can we use it in persuasion? They're human emotions. We're emotional creatures. Emotions are more persuasive than logic. There's no doubt about it. So let's talk about this guilt and this shame. They do overlap in the persuasion world. We see it quite a bit, especially with parents, because it is quick, fast, and easy. But as children mature, they become teenagers, they want to be autonomous, it can backfire on you. And that's the challenge with parenting, is you use the same tools over and over again, they work. But as children mature, they don't work anymore, but you keep using them, because they used to work. Have you ever read the book, Who Moved My Cheese? It's about these mice, right? They keep going to the same room to get cheese, and all of a sudden there's no cheese there. And they kept going back. It changed. And some of them starved to death. The others started looking for more cheese. Right? You got to find more tools. So examples of guilt, before we talk about is this right or wrong, ethical, unethical, is that people appeal to personal values, moral principles, on how a particular action or decision conflicts with those values. That would be cognitive dissonance, if you know that law of persuasion and maximum influence. Guilt will come. And they'll change your behavior, right? This is your value. This is who you are. This is what you do. Can guilt them into doing it, right? When you show someone they're doing something against their beliefs, attitudes, values, that stretches the rubber band. Remember, that's cognitive dissonance. If you don't know what that is, go back to the archives and listen to the podcast on that. That's a powerful persuasion tool. And that can cause people, through guilt, to be very persuaded. Or you can highlight the consequences. Guilt can be induced by emphasizing the potential negative consequences of a person's actions or decisions. When you make them aware how their behavior affects others and can cause harm, that could motivate them through guilt to act differently. When you show them that bad things are going to happen to them or to others, could be real or perceived, guilt can be used to persuade. You can manipulate expectations. You can trigger reciprocity or obligation. When you let them know all the sacrifices have been made for them, all the hours, all the money, all the things we've done for you, that's reciprocity. When your brother-in-law calls, hey, remember all the things I've done to you. The parents, hey, everything we do for you. Remember the time I gave you this, I did this for you. That's using reciprocity in a negative way, but can trigger guilt, and people will do it just because they have to repay that debt. Or you could just play on the personal relationship. We see this a lot with family members, friends. When you emphasize how a person's actions may have hurt or disappointed someone that they care about, guilt can happen. And of course, they can be motivated and persuaded. Or you can use social norms, right? Social validation, another law of persuasion. When you show them how their behavior is opposite or deviates from the social norm or societal expectations, that's not the standard conduct. Guilt can persuade. You know, everyone's doing it this way. Everyone will know that's not how it's done. Some try to create a sense of responsibility that they're responsible. They're the only one responsible. And if it doesn't happen, if they don't do it, there's going to be this negative outcome. This bad thing's going to happen. They're the only one. They're the only ones that could win the game. They're the only ones that could finish the project. If they don't do it, it won't happen and the whole team will fail. that type of thing can trigger guilt. And remember, guilt, I did something wrong, I'm fixing it. Shame, I am wrong, there's something wrong with me. That's the difference here. So there's a lot of overlap in how to use this. Because when you look at shame, same type of things. There's the social pressure. Their actions are different than what society expects. And remember, with the law of social validation, that 90-95% of people will just follow the social norm. That's the standard. That's what they do. We see the public shaming like we heard in South Park. Maybe people would normally litter, but people are watching and they don't. I had some students do some studies and found that people are more likely to wash their hands when there's people watching them versus not watching them. In fact, one study was following people that were trying to save energy, right? Good cause. But when they posted the results of how much energy they saved or did not save in the paper, that changed it. That's public shaming. Guilt tripping, disappointing others. We see that with parents letting the team down. There's comparative shaming. Well, your older brother, your older sister, they always did. This happens. See, parents do this. They compare other siblings. I don't recommend that. Teachers do this. Well, so-and-so got this grade. So-and-so did this. They compare you. They shame you. Oh, something's wrong with me. They're smart. I'm not. That could have very damaging results. But again, very persuasive, very motivating. So there is overlap with shame and guilt and how it's used in persuasion and influence. But remember, but internally very different. Remember, guilt, I did a bad thing. Shame is, I am a bad person. So are we allowed to use this? Is it ethical, unethical, moral, immoral, good, bad, ugly? What do we say? A little bit of yes. I mean, the whole esteem thing, we've talked about that quite a bit. We know that when you boost someone's self-esteem, it opens the doors to influence. You bruise it, it's much harder to influence that person. But let me just put it to you this way. I don't always recommend these tools, but let me say, having a tool is better than no tool. Like in leadership training, we want to inspire, we want to empower, but some people are uninspirable. Some people are unempowerable. So sometimes we have these tools that we keep every once in a while, whether it be desperation, fear, or guilt, maybe every once in a while, I'd be okay with that if you had to use a little guilt to get someone to do something that's in their best interest, that can help them out, that they didn't want to do. Maybe you've got to decide here. What I'm saying is there's better tools to have. But if those tools aren't working, sometimes you have to regress to some of these other tools that aren't the best tools, but better than no tools. I mean, you don't want to be chopping down a tree with a rock or a hammer. But I'd take a hammer over my bare hands if I had to chop down that tree. So this is one of those last chance persuasion tools, motivators. Maybe they made promises and they're not keeping them. And there's really no good reason not to. Maybe they're breaking the rules during the negotiations that you set up ahead of time. Now, careful if you use this in public. That social pressure of people watching could be bigger than the guilt. Like teenagers, you know, what other people think. Maybe you can guilt your teenager one-on-one, but if all their friends are around while you're doing it, all that friends, that social pressure could be bigger than the guilt. So be careful with that. Again, not the best persuasion tool, but better than no tool. So I'm okay with using this. You can send me an email if you disagree. If you've tried better tools and they're not working, it's a win-win for both parties, for you and for them. All the relevant information was revealed. They know exactly what's going on. And your intent is to help and serve them. If those are in place, I'm okay with this. Short term doesn't last very long, but it's better than not being motivated at all. And if you need to persuade them pretty fast, it is a fast motivator. It can be quick, but man, there's some long-term consequences you have to be careful of. I would say most people use it in the wrong way, in the negative way. But if you needed that to get something done, to save someone's life, to get them motivated, it was a win-win situation. Hey, you revealed all the information, and your intent was to help and serve them. So there you have it. That's the answer to the persuasion question of the week. Thanks for being here. Appreciate you being part of the podcast. Tell your family, friends, and enemies about the podcast. We can be found at iTunes, Spotify, and iHeart under Maximize Your Influence. Special of the week is the Millionaire Psychology. Going to put the link in the podcast at MaximizeYourInfluence.com. Going to put a steep discount on it. And the reason we're going to do that this week is because part of Millionaire Psychology is EQ, emotional intelligence, understanding these emotions, triggering these emotions, understanding your own emotions. High EQ is much more important than high IQ. Every time you look at success, that emotional intelligence, understanding emotions. We should have took a class in school. All right, here's shame, here's guilt, here's happiness, here's frustration, here's resentment, here's fear. But understanding those emotions. Go to Millionaire Psychology, check it out, get the link, get the discount. And the key with Millionaire Psychology is pretty simple. You want to be a millionaire or whatever your goal is, start thinking, acting, and doing what other millionaires do. Success and wealth is really an open book test. All the answers are there. And Millionaire Psychology gives them to you with all the audios and the application guide. So learn what we talked about today. Be more aware of the guilt people are using on you. Is it triggering shame? Is it triggering guilt? Is it working? Should you use it? When should you use it? That is up to you. But start practicing it. Start thinking about it. Put it in your influence toolbox. Increase your EQ. Enhance your charisma. And go out and persuade with power.